Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, and my name is Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with my good buddy who does the news with us, Martin the Voter Willis.
Yes.
Because you're actually planning on voting.
I'm casting my vote.
You're old school, too. You're going in and – well, do you guys have, like, early voting or mail-in or anything like that?
Well, I live in Maine. We just have this little shack, and you know, there's Fred and Bob there, and they'll just
get old Fred and Bob.
Yeah, and I just check on the box and leave it outside some cooler, you know, beer cooler.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about the elections being rigged and all of it. Do you trust Fred and Bob? You know. You think they're going to get your ballot to the right place and get you counted?
You know, I don't want to get political here. I almost went in. I'm surrounded. I'm not going to say anything other than I'm surrounded by a lot of Trump poster signs everywhere.
Really?
It really is. It's a big trailer, you know, a cargo trailer. It's got Trump plastered all over it down the road. And, yeah, it's everywhere around here.
I didn't want to get into politics either. I was just talking about Fred and Bob.
Yeah, well, I don't know who Fred and Bob are, you know, but I have my suspicions.
Oh, I see what you're getting at. Yeah. All right, well, good luck. Hopefully your ballot makes it to where it's supposed to get.
I hope so.
Yeah, I mailed mine in like a week or so ago, so.
Good idea.
If mine's wherever it's going to get, whether that's a trash can or hopefully it got to the right place and I was counted.
Yeah.
So, but that's all we have to say about that, huh?
Right. Yeah.
Let's move on. And we'll move on to my guest for this week. This is a cool one. This is a guy named Ronnie LeBlanc. I like to say that, LeBlanc. Mm. And he's not from anywhere fancy. He's from Massachusetts. And he actually wrote a book called Monsterland, and it's about this area near where he lives in Leominster,
as they say here.
Leominster. Oh, okay, yeah. You know. So, yeah, mm-hmm. So he wrote about this area in his around his town called Monsterland. It's a well-known kind of area where just lots of weird phenomena happens. And he had a strange experience when he was a kid. And he decided to write a book about these local legends about what is referred to as Monsterland.
Wow. Now, I wonder far away Leominster is from the Bridgewater Triangle. I'm not sure if you are aware of that.
It's about 6.3 miles. No, I'm not sure. I'm pretending that I knew.
Yeah. Well, you could be right. Yeah. No, the Bridgewater Triangle is another one in, you know, the Massachusetts area. A lot of weird stuff goes on. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that. So there's lots of weirdness out there.
There is.
In Massachusetts. Scary.
From orbs to ancient rituals from Native Americans there to satanical to all kinds of weird stuff.
Really?
In that
interesting
area.
Mm-hmm. This area is kind of close to Boston. Looks like it's not too far out of Boston. To the north. But
that would be the northwest of Boston.
Uh-huh. That's where this is.
Yes.
And where's the Bridgeport
triangle. I was afraid area, you're going to ask me that.
Not
I
sure.
Think it's
that's okay. That's okay.
I think it's South Moore. You know, not south and somewhat west of Boston, but I don't know exactly. I think it's a 200-mile rate, you know, coverage.
Oh, really? But, so maybe this is part of that area, because the phenomena that you are describing is similar to what he describes in his town here. So, yeah, really interesting stuff. Pretty strange. These places around the world, there seems to be places that have, you know, all of this weirdness going on. So that's what we talked to Ronnie about. So it's a lot of fun. I definitely recommend people to pick up the book Monsterland.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. So, but let's, before we do that, talk some UFO news. And you, my UFO news friend, can go ahead and start us off.
All right. Well, I love this one. It's just really interesting to me. And it's titled, Idaho Witness Says Rectangle UFO Fell from the Sky. He was in it's called Post Falls in Idaho. And this happened on October 12th of this last year. And he heard a sonic boom. So he goes outside and he looks up and he sees this appeared to be a large rectangular object just tumbling end over end and emitting a large amount of smoke, like a yellowish color, a gray. And as it was falling, and he said that it was 4 to 5 times the width of a typical airliner, but I'm not sure how he could tell that at the height. And he said that he watched this thing fall for about 4 minutes, which is an incredibly long time. And it got sort of close to the ground. He heard something like an engine start or something, and it started to level out, and then it just started tumbling again. In other words, it looked like it was crashing behind the mountains where he was at. And I think one of the most interesting parts of this story is after it disappeared, he called the Spokane FAA tower, which is about 25 miles away, and they basically thanked him, and they said that you know, they didn't ask any more information, which I think is kind of like putting the whole thing to bed, you know. So interesting to see. I'm sure it was probably military or something, and you know, I'm surprised if that was, he didn't see anyone eject from it, or possibly they did as it got closer to the ground. Hard to say how far away the mountains were and all that, to know whether the pilot escaped, if that was a military craft. It could have been, you know, it is at this time, you know, it was investigated by MUFON. And James Millard was the investigator's name, and he closed it as unknown, as a lot of these are.
Wow. Yeah, that's a weird one. I know, because, that's, again, it's anecdotal information you have to go off of, but those are some of the more interesting ones.
Yeah, he actually had time to go in and get his binoculars and come out and watch the thing. And he said there was, you know, reflections off of it as it was spinning and stuff. But, yeah, it's a good one. Interesting.
Very interesting.
And I'm surprised that, you know, if it was some type of craft, that there wasn't any type of other reports about this.
But, you know, a lot of people just aren't looking up in the sky either. So, you know, they're going about their business.
Smartphone. Texting.
Looking at their phone, walking into traffic and stuff. So I want to talk about one. Mainly, it's not that, I don't think it's that great of a case, but this story has made, is making a round in the news ever since we posted it. And unfortunately, these days, the UK tabloids pick up a lot of our stories and don't give us credit. And this is one where they've blown completely out of proportion and made a real, I think, made it seem really silly. But anyway, this is a picture from Hawaii. So that might even ring a bell to some of you. Some of you might have heard about, you know, an alien base in Hawaii. So Roger Marsh wrote this. This is a MUFON case where this gentleman had taken some pictures, and beautiful pictures in Hawaii. And in one of these, it was near a place called Kanoha Bay. Like, I can't say it. I even watched Lilo and Stitch. You know, I was babysitting it and watched Lilo and Stitch this weekend. And you'd think maybe that would help me with my Hawaiian pronunciations, but it hasn't. But anyway, he took this picture, and in one of the pictures, he zoomed in, and there's a little what appears to possibly be a dome-shaped kind of object. Now, when you look at the picture in general, you can't see it. It's just a tiny little blip. So you have to really zoom in on this picture to be able to see it. And even then, it's just kind of a smudge. So it's difficult to say what it is. It's not... you know, often with these pictures, it's very easy to see this same kind of blur as a bird or something. The only difference is this one's a little differently colored. This one's colored more like yellowish, orangish, whereas, you know, usually those blurs are more typical of a bird. Now, I guess they do have multiple different kinds of colored birds and things out there in Hawaii, so... really, it could nearly be anything, but of course the tabloids pick it up. They talk to some of the more goofy people in this field, and all of a sudden the story making the rounds is a UFO base in Hawaii based off of this one simple picture. But it is kind of, wow. I don't know, you can't tell for sure what it is in this photo, but yeah. Kind of funny.
Well, you know, if you were landing on the Earth and you wanted to put a underground base somewhere, you know, a UFO base somewhere, I think Hawaii would be a perfect place for it. So, yeah, I'm on board with that.
As far as just it's a great place to visit and be hang out.
Yeah,
that's a
good place
true.
To park the craft.
Yeah. I have never been to Hawaii, but everybody who goes to Hawaii loves it.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
I've never been there. Never been there.
Yep. Yeah, I need to go.
Yeah.
I have a friend out there who scuba dives a bunch, and he posts the most amazing pictures and videos of underwater stuff, not of UFOs and aliens or alien bases. But, yeah, I'd love to go there. But, sorry,
yes. Time you put him, you got to put him to work and find this where this base is.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's an interesting picture. It is a shame that it's so difficult. It does look like a dome craft, like you described it, orange and a little bit of orange and sort of a whitish or yellowish top, almost like it was, you know, by the sun, you know, shadowed by the sun. But anyway, you're right. It's blurred. And I'm just wondering, is there a way to enhance something like that? Can they do that with the pixels?
The problem is it's a motion blur. So it's whatever you can do with the information that you have. With some motion blurs, they can use tools that kind of estimate and undo the motion. But
I think
something like this where it's really high speed and, you know, it's so blurred, I doubt they would be able to do anything. It was a blur, kind of an de-blurring type of tool that they used on that placard for that alleged alien, Roswell alien, that Jaime and others were pushing, where they were able to unblur the placard and said it was, you know, just a mummified body, essentially. But so it's possible, but, you know, people have also been trying to use this on that Raimi memo, so that memo of someone in Roswell holding a memo and trying to decipher what that memo says, but it doesn't work for that because it's too blurred. So, yeah, so I doubt, yeah. I wouldn't think that. I think this is too far, too blurred to be able to do something with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, the case of a lot of these is too bad.
Yep. Speaking of Hawaii, though, another story I think is pretty exciting. Ted Rowe, he is one of the founders of NARCAP. Some of you will know who that is. That's the National Aviation Reporting Center on Anomalous Phenomena. So they use the term UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. They were, I think, the first to use that term. And you may have noticed Hillary used the term recently on Jimmy Kimmel, and her campaign manager, John Podesta, uses that term, and it is because of Ted Rowe and NARCAP. They got to meet Podesta many years ago in Washington, D.C., and brief him, and Podesta now has adopted that term as well, because these guys are very well-respected researchers. They work on aviation cases for the most part. They get cases straight from pilots, and you can go to NARCAP's site and see some of their analysis. They're not like out and about. You don't see them often at UFO conferences. They're very careful about just working within the mainstream aviation and science community because they take this all very seriously, and they, of course, try not to be fringe but more scientific about their research. Well, one cool thing about this, and I've mentioned this before, is that Ted Rowe is going to be speaking at the UFO Congress. But he also submitted a report, essentially just a letter to us that we posted, and he is launching a peer-reviewed journal. So he's looking to create a peer-reviewed journal so that UFO researchers can submit their research, their analysis to this group. They can look it over and give some feedback, and for anything that's, you know, truly anomalous, that's been well researched, they can post it in a journal. Others have tried to do this. There is a group called the Scientific, the SSC, the Scientific, what the heck is their name? Something Exploration. Can't remember their name, which was actually started many years ago, and it was the same premise.
It's Society for Scientific Exploration.
There you go, Society for Scientific Exploration. Scientists are part of this group as well, but they have gone, even though it was started by UFO people, they've gone more into more like consciousness and things like this, and these guys want to focus on UAPs, I should say. So, really cool. So he's actually working with Erica Lukes, who you've had, I think, on your show, and she's also speaking at the UFO Congress, and they're going to be working together on creating this organization, and he's going to be talking more about it at the UFO Congress. But it's kind of an exciting project. Others have tried. I really hope that they are able to pull this off because, you know, we could get some really interesting cases. I mean, what comes to mind is the great work done by the SCU group that analyzed the Puerto Rico video. That's still controversial. Not everybody agrees with their findings, but it's a well-researched document, and at least it has brought the level of research of that particular phenomenon to a higher level, to where, you know, people are not just talking about opinions, they're having to back up their opinions with research, and so, yeah, this is exciting.
It is. It seems to me that this may help get other people more seriously involved that otherwise wouldn't be. So I think it's a good thing, absolutely.
Yeah. So hopefully,
you know, like the science community, for instance, if they know there's a peer-reviewed journal, they may take a look at it and have some interest in working with it.
Exactly. You know, and Dr. Richard Haynes is the other person who works with Ted Rowe with NARCAP, and they're very well respected. Dr. Richard Haynes has worked for NASA, and they're very well respected, and they do work with mainstream scientists and, you know, FAA and others, so because they are respected. And so this is how you bring respectability to a field. And just like you're saying, that's how you get the involvement of the mainstream.
Yeah, that is exciting.
Very exciting. Speaking of NASA, people who have worked for NASA, I haven't posted this to the site. I sent it out in an email, but I am working on posting it on the site. And I just want your input because I don't know if you've talked with this gentleman. But we are having at the UFO Congress a gentleman by the name of Ken Johnston. He actually was a NASA trainer. So he trained NASA astronauts, among other things. He claims that he worked on the Apollo project and was told to destroy some pictures, but he tucked some aside, and he feels that these pictures show alien bases. And he's going to be talking about that at the UFO Congress.
Wow.
You ever heard of this guy?
No, I just pulled him up. He's called a NASA whistleblower.
Yeah, that's what he calls himself. He definitely worked with NASA. He was an aerospace engineer, or aeronautical engineer, I think is what he was. But he's since retired. I knew of him, and I saw he was going to be speaking in Roswell. And so I wanted to meet him because, you know, those are some pretty lofty claims, some pretty interesting stuff. And so he actually approached me and said hello, and we talked for a little bit. And, you know, I noticed that George Knapp had interviewed him, and George Knapp found him to be I asked him about him, but he found him to be a nice guy, and he, you know, believes what he's saying, and seems to be, you know, genuine. It's not like he's trying to make money off of this or anything. He just feels that he's discovered something extraordinary.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd like to get my eyeballs on those pictures.
You will, because you're going to be at the Congress.
I can't wait.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's just kind of cool. I wanted to kind of talk about that and see if you had any input, see if you knew about him.
No, but I do, you know, I think it was last year I was at the Goddard Flight Center, and I met and sat with a I was there visiting with Ray Stanford, and we went there and sat with I want to call him a satellite. He was some type of project engineer, mm-hmm. and total interest in UFOs. And cool. He's very serious, you know. He didn't. I tried to get him on my show, but he didn't. He didn't really feel comfortable speaking about it.
Yeah,
that's too bad. But it is. There are some people that are open minded that do work, you know, for NASA and places like this.
Yeah, there definitely are. All right. Well, did you have any other news, my friend? Oh, can I ask you another thing? And
yeah, sure.
If you haven't seen it, that's fine. But you're a big advocate of these videos, and so it's fun when you do see them to see what you think. Not that I'm fishing for compliments, but I'm trying to promote some important stuff. And so we did post a week or so ago our newest edition of Open Minds magazine, the video version, and I'm very proud of this one. This one's called The Truth About UFOs and Military Secrecy. Of course, listeners of your show and my show will be familiar with a lot of this material, but I think it's the first time it's been put together in a concise manner. But it's all focused around government documents demonstrating the government has taken UFOs seriously, has investigated UFOs, and have labeled them as very important incidents. And that's what this video is. And the reason, you know, we focus in this arena is because, sure, maybe some people who are an interest in this field take these things for granted, but the mainstream needs to be demonstrated. They need to be given the hard information. You can't just say, oh, yeah, government's been doing this or that. No, you have to provide documents to demonstrate this is the case. And that's mm-hmm. what we've done here, is just to show that although the Air Force keeps saying we haven't investigated UFOs since 1969, that is just unfortunately completely false, and their own records show otherwise. And that's what this entire video is focused on, is the many, many documents which prove that they certainly have taken this issue seriously since 1969. Not to say that they're hiding alien bodies, you know, I don't know that. We can't prove that with this video or their documents, but we can at least show they certainly have taken it seriously.
Yeah, did John Greenwald uncover some of these documents that you used in that?
Kind of. I mean, there is we do have interviews with John Greenwald, Lee Spiegel, and Paul Dean in the video. There is a document that John Greenwald talks about. I think he brought this document to many people's attention. However, I've known about the document. A lot of people who have been into UFO documents have known about these documents for a long time. A lot of these documents, you know, have existed since before I was born, and researchers who have been researching this around the time I was born have been writing about it. So they've been out there, but not well known. John Greenwald has certainly been the person, though, who has brought forward a lot of these documents and made them more well known. So we did interview him, and he's been instrumental in you know, getting more documents that haven't been seen. So we do talk about that in this video. So John's a very important person when it comes to one of the most important people when it comes to UFO documents.
Absolutely. Are you there?
Yep. That's all you have to say, absolutely.
Yeah, because I haven't watched the film yet.
Well, I can't wait until you do to get your feedback.
I will. It was on my to-do list the other day, and I just
I kind of thought probably would have, because instead you were going to watch it. But hey, I know people get busy, things get busy. That's why I need to remind people to go watch it, even my listeners. And, you know, my listeners are very important to me. So when I put this stuff together, my listeners are my primary audience. You know, they're people I'm thinking of. So anyhow, that's it for my what I have to contribute to UFO News. You have anything else?
No, that's it for me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us again. Mr. Martin, I hope you have a pleasant time voting tomorrow and you are not accosted or, you know, maligned in any way.
Yeah, Fred and Bob. All right, man.
All right, say hi to Fred and Bob for me.
I will. All right.
All right, let's go ahead and talk to Mr. LeBlanc. I am very happy to welcome to the show Ronnie LeBlanc. I love the name.
Thanks. How are you, man?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So, this is kind of cool. There's a review. You wrote a book called Monsterland, and there's a review here at Mysterious Universe written by Nick Redfern. We've had him on a few times, so a name my listeners will know. And I guess you did a talk, is that correct, at the Greater New England UFO Conference recently?
Yeah, that was just about a month ago. Nick was our keynote speaker. Mm-hmm. So he was in town and he was presenting on Men in Black and Bigfoot in the UK. And so I did a presentation along with my buddy and my partner here, Bill Penning, who's basically meeting him kind of got me into the book and basically the whole kind of ride. But we did a presentation on Bigfoot in Massachusetts, but also the orange orbs, which people are starting to see all over the country. And specifically, we've had some encounters here just in Massachusetts.
Uh-huh. So Monsterland, the book is named after an area with some strangeness. Maybe if you could describe the area and what people report.
Sure. So there's a small section of Leominster, actually South Leominster, Massachusetts, and it borders the town of Lancaster. And it's an area that the locals deem Monsterland. And I didn't really figure out why that was named the way it was. But basically, what I knew growing up and what kids would know about it was that it was a spot where there were sand dunes, there were power lines. Kids would ride their dirt bikes or take their little BMX bikes or whatever, and they would go to the sand dunes. But then also for teenagers and kids in high school, it was a place where they would go and park and go party, have bonfires. Well, when people were out there, they would have these experiences similar to these Lover Lane scenarios where a couple's in the car and all of a sudden this monster comes up to the window, or they see these weird balls of light, or they see, you know, craft and different things. So it's one of these areas that's had that that history, but it's not really talked about as much. And yeah, I just started kind of digging into it and researching it, and it was, I was kind of blown away as more and more stories were kind of revealing themselves.
Mm-hmm. So you got a hold of some of the witnesses?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is a lot of the people, so basically how this all kind of got started was a friend of mine who I didn't really know at the time actually when this happened, but him and his wife were in Leominster State Forest, which is, encompasses about five towns. It's 4,500 acres. It's a huge amount of property, and they were going for a hike, and they were the only ones out there. It was like a Tuesday afternoon. It was like 90 degrees, and they were on their way to the reservoir. And as they were on their way, they came to a fork in this path. They both kind of argued with each other over the heat and everything else, and one wanted to go one way, wanted to go the other. Well, Bill kind of won the argument, and they started going in his direction, Bill Penning and Julie Penning. About 10 minutes later, he kind of realizes, I went the wrong way. So he turns around, they start going back. She starts yelling at him. Well, as they come back to that point where they were came to that fork in the path, they noticed these tracks in the path that weren't there about 15 minutes ago. And as they got closer, they were, you know, human-shaped footprints with toes. There were six prints that basically came out of the woods, onto the trail, back out of the woods. And the distance, the stride between each of the steps and the depth of the steps was just really surreal and spooky. That all of a sudden they started having a feeling of being watched. And that really led into me meeting with him and helping cast one of those prints. And then once that kind of got out locally in the papers and local radio, people started feeling comfortable enough to start sharing their stories. And so that's how all these things started coming forth, where people were talking to Bill and talking to myself and saying, hey, I had an experience 20 years ago, or my friend just told me about this story, which I think is, you know, not a bear now. I think it's something else. And so that's how all these things started kind of like snowballing, so to speak, and turn into a book.
Mm-hmm. So it also the area has a lot of stories of orange orbs. Now, more recently, orange orbs are kind of ascribed to Chinese lanterns, which is kind of more of a recent that it's become popular. However, mm-hmm. do these stories in that area go back a long ways?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up. As I was doing some digging, and you know, the orange orb kind of phenomenon seems to be you know, fairly recent, but it really isn't. And there's a lot of scenarios and scenes within UFO lore that have that in there. And one of them was close by, and literally the next town over is Ayer and Devens, Fort Devens, for example, the Army military base. But in 1952, they were actually over eight of these orange orbs basically flew over the base, flew over the airport runway at the time, and the military was unable to ascertain what the heck these things were at that time. And so that I was astonished to see that, because it seems to be like more people are seeing them now than ever, and I don't know if that's just people are paying a little bit more attention, but there is definitely a distinct difference between the Chinese lanterns and these orbs, which seem to be intelligently controlled. They seem to be some kind of weird plasma energy. It's when you look at them, you just kind of know you're looking at something very, very unique and special. Whether some people may argue that's a natural phenomena, like ball lightning and things like that, which typically only will come out during lightning storms. These are seen in broad daylight. These are seen in normal weather. So what else could these things be if they're not that? And it's just kind of gotten my my interest peaked more to the point now it's become a mission to kind of find out what these things are.
Yeah, the balls of light phenomena is really interesting. It happens in certain areas around the world. We have a guy coming to the UFO Congress, Erling Strand, who investigates these for a university in Norway, and these are the Hesdalen lights.
Sure.
Like you said, a lot of people kind of feel that perhaps they are some sort of natural phenomenon, but I saw him do a talk, and he doesn't feel that way. He feels, like you said, that they're intelligently controlled, and they seem to be something more than just sort of naturally occurring plasma.
You know, it's and the reason I believe that they are something different is that there's been too many just personally, on my personal level and with Bill and others, that there's some kind of connection with consciousness as whether you're kind of thinking of something or you say something out loud and they seem to be able to respond and show up or kind of do things based on what you say. So that's the element where it gets pretty spooky, and then you kind of go, okay, there's something else here. Mm-hmm. And then you read other stories where people have those similar situations, and that even makes you more inquisitive and trying to dig further into what's kind of going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think they technically can be called UFOs because they're flying,
right.
And we don't know what they are. However, the orb phenomena is also connected to ghost kind of mythology, and it seems like you kind of research a lot of areas of the paranormal. What are your feelings on that? Are there ghostly related orbs of light? Do you think these are that? What do you think?
You know, it's interesting that you can't deny the parallels there and the connection. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be kind of looked at a little bit more deeply, but I think there is some kind of, whether it's a process, I'm not sure, but I think it does have to do something with the spirit realm, or if you might want to call it interdimensional and dimensions and things like that. I think it does kind of play into those elements of maybe quantum physics and quantum reality and things of that nature, where we're just starting to kind of crack the shell too. So I'm not sure, but I think it definitely has some serious significance because this seems to be a definite connection or parallel to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it. You know, I had a guy on recently. I've had him on several times, Colonel Alexander, but he was talking about the Skinwalker Ranch, and they sort of, or at least he uses a term, and I can't remember it exactly, but sort of like a sentient anomalous entity or something like that. But it doesn't necessarily say it's extraterrestrial or ghostly, but it opens up, like you said, the possibility of multidimensional. Just that all we can know is that it seems intelligent and certainly not of a physical nature that we're used to.
Yeah, you know, and there's an interaction there, and I think a lot of these stories too that have happened in the past have been kind of discarded as kookiness, but they may have, be pieces of the puzzle that everyone's been kind of looking and searching for that we need to kind of put back into the pile and kind of reassemble the pieces.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to like the orb phenomena and then these beings that are seen, do the events usually happen together? Like both of these things are witnessed, or are they separate, or maybe both?
You know, it seems to be a mix of all that, where they're seen, say a ball of light is seen immediately after a Bigfoot-like creature runs into the wood line, and all of a sudden a ball of light shoots up from that same area, or the craft are seen and Bigfoot are seen in the same area, or sightings during UFO flaps, and also there's creatures being seen off the side of the road. So there's a, again, a weird connection there too. And what is it? Is there, some kind of doorway opening up where all these things are kind of coming out? But it seems to be, I find it fascinating that they're all kind of centered around these areas of high activity. And Leominster, in this part of our area, which seems to have had this kind of stuff going on for a long time, I wonder what is causing that, and what is so special about these spots that attracts these type of things.
Mm-hmm. Now, a weird orb story. Can you recall, like, what is one of the weirder stories that you ran across?
Every single one of them are very weird, but one that just really kind of you start kind of reexamining everything and what you're really dealing with here. But Bill Penning and I had gone to Leominster State Forest and attempted to do a night investigation, do a hike in there. And this is like the early stages of us just kind of getting into all this. And we had really terrible lighting, and we started making our way down the trail, and we really didn't get too far. But we definitely had this overwhelming feeling of being watched or something else. The woods was pretty silent. There was you couldn't hear anything, and it just had that spookiness feeling. So we're like, oh, let's kind of double back to the car. So we get back and try to regroup, and as we're sitting there in the parking area at the edge of the trail, Bill kind of points to the outline of Bobcat Mountain. And now this is in January, so we could see the outline of the trees. There's not a lot of leaves or anything like that, aside from pine trees of that. We can make out everything, and it was pretty decent night, moonlight. And so he points to the peak or the edge of Bobcat Mountain, says, that's the spot we really need to go. No one really kind of goes off trail, goes all the way. And maybe, 30 seconds, a minute later, to the left of us, as we're sitting there, and our eyes are now pretty adjusted to the light in the evening, this orange ball of light seems to materialize out of nowhere and just all of a sudden is there moving towards Bobcat Mountain. And I grab his arm and I was like, dude, are you seeing this right now? What are you seeing? I had him describe it. Orange ball of light, it's moving towards, okay. I don't want to make sure I'm not going crazy here. So we're watching this thing and it starts heading towards the Bobcat Mountain. And as it gets closer and closer and as it gets to the edge of the trees, I see that this thing is not a Chinese lantern. It's definitely moving on its own. It's moving with some kind of motivation and a purpose. And there's no sound. But once it hits the trees, it illuminates the trees as it's going through the woods. And it was just a sight that was like, holy cow. Well, right where Bill had pointed to, this ball of light hovers over that spot for maybe a second. And then shoots straight down into the ground. Light goes out. And this thing was about the size of a basketball in my estimation, but all you could hear was us breathing heavy and like, let's get out of here. It was, but again, it seemed to respond to his connection, that spot. And again, when all of this kind of seemed to happen and the orange balls of light seemed to be connected when a Bigfoot type situation kind of comes into play. And as I did more digging, there seems to be a lot of these type of situations, this high strangeness, more and more with these type of encounters. Mm-hmm. So that was just blew my mind.
Yeah, that's cool. So I was not expecting you to share a personal story. How many times in that area have you experienced strangeness?
There's been four. Wow. Times now, and there's also been another time where I went to on vacation at the Cape, which is 3 hours away, and there's a couple pairs of them flying over the ocean where we were staying. It seemed almost like following. It's like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. And as Bill as well has had some separate encounters on his own, but us together as well seem to attract these things.
Hmm. What's another one of your personal Monsterland experiences?
My first kind of introduction, I guess, would be I used to live kind of close to Monsterland, behind close to Fallbrook School, and I would take my, which was just a normal bike, and ride along those trails, and you go to these back trails that would go through the power lines, and you kind of connect over there. Well, I always avoided a particular trail kind of on my way to Monsterland. And again, you hear all these stories within that area of Monsterland, but all around these other spots too, there's encounters and stories. But well, one day I kind of went to the towards the face of this trail, and it's like, you know, I'm going it. I'm feeling brave today. I'm going to do it. So I approach it, and it was like two oak trees on either side. So it just seemed like this prehistoric gate to this place, and it had a pretty slight incline. So I had to kind of jump off the bike and walk it in. But as soon as I got down that trail, this is just that feeling you're getting watched, and just that the hair on the back of your neck goes up, and you start kind of just feeling uneasy. And I'm walking through, and then I start noticing I'm not hearing any animals, I'm not hearing any bird life, nothing. And as I come around the corner and I kind of able to see a little bit, just the trail kind of gets really narrow. It's very tough to see. So I kind of stop, and I'm not sure why I stopped, but I just looked forward, and I was just trying to regain, all right, where am I? What am I doing? Do I want to continue walking down this trail? I just had that spookiness feeling to it. And all of a sudden, the forest just erupts in front of me, where I see the shrubs, the trees moving. It was like an elephant was like ripping through, and it was the sound and the feeling kind of reverberated through the soles of my feet. My whole body shook, but was perplexing was there was nothing for me to see in front of me. Like there was all these things kind of moving and the forest kind of erupting, but there was no explanation or nothing visually for me to see, like a moose or a deer or a bear or something big that could make that noise and was moving all those things. And I jumped, you know, I couldn't move for a little bit until that thing that stopped, and just I couldn't hear it anymore. And as soon as I could, I felt like I kind of out of shock, I jumped on my bike and I rode out of there so fast. And I was just trying to figure out in my head, what did I just experience? You know, and you're only thinking what you know in the forest, you know, in the woods at that time. There was never anything like a Bigfoot would come into play as an answer to that question. You know, it had to be some kind of known animal. So I couldn't figure it out. I could not wrap my head around it. And I think I just kind of tucked it away. But then, you know, flash forward years later, as I start digging into these stories and these different encounters in that same area, similar situations with people having things, you know, rocks thrown at them, or hearing what sounds like a gorilla or whistling, other weird things happening in those same spots, I start to kind of wonder, man, did I have some kind of encounter of some sort at that early age? And I was like, you know, 12 years old.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. Yeah. At the time when you were, did you know about the stories of the strange stuff in that area?
No idea. Mm-hmm. I was, I think around that time is when I started really having an interest into, and I, as all boys, you know, were, you know, grown up on Star Wars and G.I. Joe mm-hmm. and these things and monsters. So I had that affinity for that kind of stuff. But then I also had, seemed to have like an obsession now to find out about Loch Ness Monster and all these different things. Mm-hmm. And the Bigfoot piece was definitely really attracted to that and felt this weird connection to it. So, but I never connected it to this area. I never heard anything about it until much, much later into adulthood. You always hear about stuff being on the West Coast when it comes to Bigfoot, not on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but more and more, there's so many stories. It's unbelievable.
It's funny. That story reminds me of Stranger Things, a scene out of Stranger Things.
Yes. You know what's funny is, you know, the book came out in May, and the people that have read it and read the book are like, oh, my God, this is so – it's such a weird connection to Stranger Things, and I find it wild that it does have a lot of those kind of parallels, because I fell in love with that show. It's just amazing,
mm-hmm.
and I can't wait for season two, but yeah, if you enjoy that kind of stuff and that kind of thrill ride and that kind of mystery to it, this definitely has all those elements that I think are very will keep you up at night and kind of really make you start thinking a little bit deeper about things.
Mm-hmm. So that event, and then, you know, hearing these stories, were you kind of, did you grow up then, and were you always open to this weirdness?
Yeah, you know, I always felt that, you know, we don't know everything that we think we know. Yeah, you know, we're very egocentric in thinking that we're the only, you know, species out there, intelligent life in the universe, and we, you know, just discovered, hey, the universe is actually, oh, by the way, it's 10 times larger than you thought it was. We're discovering new species all the time. So I think there's just so many things that are starting to be unraveled. I think more people are looking into things, and more people are wanting to know the truth about things that have been kind of hidden for so long, that I think at some point it's gonna pop, or something's gonna break, because there's just so much I think attention towards it now, and I think a lot of people are looking for that, especially with the elections and everything else, and people are kind of sick of the fakeness, and they want to have some want to learn and want to find out what's going on. People are seeing these things; it cannot be all hoaxes. I mean, it just takes one of these instances to be real for this whole phenomenon to be real.
Mm-hmm. Have you know, the experiences people had in the area produced many photos or videos?
You know, somebody did send me a note a few days ago about having a strange photo from Leominster State Forest. You know, I think that's the next goal, is to try to get some kind of videographic evidence, something more deeper within that area. And I think there's definitely some stuff out there, but not something that's so great that you're like, oh, this, I want to share this with everybody. But mm-hmm. I think that's the next step here, with I think some collaboration that we're working on with some other researchers as well, and trying to see if that's something that we can try to pull off.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like, see, I'm from Colorado, and almost every summer, especially when I was older, I've been here about 6 years, but every year I would go to the San Luis Valley at least once or twice a year, which is kind of a similar area with lots mm-hmm. of sightings and stuff. And I had my own sighting there. And
really?
Then there's the Skinwalker area, you know, which
Utah, yeah,
which outsmarted all those guys. You know, they weren't able to get any photos or videos either, but they had experiences similar to what you're talking about, with these weird creatures and almost like it's some sort of portal.
Right.
And they talk about, and so do like Chris O'Brien, who investigated the San Luis Valley, talk about, it almost seems like this phenomena outsmarts us, and it's like, if it doesn't want you to get a photo or a video, it's just not going to let you. It's almost like it's enigmatic on purpose.
Right. Like, is it just we're just going down the rabbit hole deeper and deeper here? Are we gonna get a little bit closer to the truth, or are we just getting played with?
Yeah,
I often wonder that.
Like, it's a mystery, and it's supposed to be a mystery, and it'll remain a mystery.
Right, right.
Perhaps forever.
I hope not, but maybe that is the case.
Yeah, maybe we'll go to other planets, and right. They'll have mysterious areas we can never figure out either in the vast future. So, you know, are there instances, you know, thinking of Skinwalker and stuff like that,
yeah.
And your, I guess, you when you were 12 years old, your experience was sort of like this, that just you can't categorize, you know, that it's not a Bigfoot thing, it's not an UFO thing, it's just a weird thing. Mm. Are there some stories like that in the area?
You know, the name Monsterland comes from the fact that they were seeing a creature back in as early as 1884, based on some of the digging I've done. And you know, like a hunter was out in the area of Monsterland and saw a creature walking on two legs. And when the creature was basically picked up on that something was watched, you know, was seen, it then broke down into all fours and ran off like into the woods like an animal.
Huh.
And so in that same area, in that same year, supposedly that a farmer watched one grab cattle, rip one of his cattle to shreds and run off into the woods.
Wow.
And so, again, are these, you know, just folklore? Are these just stories? But I just find it fascinating that's in that spot. But where Moslem really, I think, got the recognition, and again, this kind of plays that legend, is in the 50s, there was a gentleman that was driving by or on a road by Old Mill Bridge, and he had seen a creature. And this was, you know, time before cell phones and everything. So freaked out, saw something that just did not make sense, but had to tell somebody. And he looked for the nearest open place of business that he can go, which was a bar at that time. And we kind of think it's based on the vicinity of where it is and knowing that this place has been there is in that same time period. There's a place called Twins, which is now called Miranda's Pub, which I had a situation in the book in one of the chapters there. But basically he runs inside and tells the manager, explains what he saw, and says, you know, I just saw this hideous creature. And the guy, the manager's kind of like, all right. Doesn't know if to believe him, but after a while, it kind of is convinced, and the gentleman says, please call the police. Okay, the guy's asking to call the cops. I guess he really saw this, you know. So calls the police, and he's waiting for him, and the guy's like, you know, I can't wait. I'm going back. The thing's going to take off. We're not going to find it. So he's like, I'm going to prove to everybody this thing exists, and he goes back, and so he tells the manager, and the manager's going to tell the police when they show up where to find him. So he takes off. The police show up, you know, quickly thereafter, maybe a few minutes, and the manager explains the situation. So they head down there. They see his car off to the side where the manager said it would be, and the door is open, the light's on, the car is running, but the guy is not to be found. So there's like, oh, he must be in the woods. He's going to come out in a second. We'll just wait for him. Well, they waited, and they waited, and they waited, and the guy never comes out. And so he supposedly disappears and never is seen again. I did some digging on that. It doesn't seem to be the case where there's any missing person that kind of fits in that time period. But again, I just really scratched the surface. I didn't do any digging, I think, deeper, and there could be something more there. But that was where it really kind of picked up and took off, and people having experiences going in that area, encountering different things. But that was the main story that really kind of pushed everything forward.
Interesting. That's really interesting. So, you know, getting into the multidimensionalism, and I know this is one of the things Nick Redfern pointed out in your book, is this idea of Bigfoot being interdimensional. And it seems, I mean, I've always felt if the Bigfoot is real, it has to be something different than your typical physical cryptozoological, you know, animal out there, because it doesn't fit that. You know, we don't find bones and pieces or nests or these sort of things.
Right. And you know what's amazing is when I talk to people, and again, I've always had been one that and I had a pleasure meeting Lauren Coleman, and the guy's amazing. But, you know, I think after doing the digging, the reading, all these different things and hearing the reports, I don't think it's an animal that we think, like you said, is in the classification of a normal animal. I think there's something else there just based on these different stories and encounters, but also the elements like you mentioned, right, where there's no bones. They suddenly disappear. They leave only a couple tracks. They're seen around these other weird phenomena. So, you know, what is going on? What I found amazing is people will easily accept if you say, you know, what if Bigfoot's an alien or some kind of interdimensional creature? And that's why we can't catch them. And they're just coming in and out, and they pop in when they want, and they disappear. Oh, that makes sense. I'm like, really? That makes more sense? That makes more sense than an animal?
Mm-hmm.
But that logic does, when you kind of think about it and go, okay, that would kind of solve that riddle of why we can't find bones, why we can't find a body, why can't we find these different things? And what backs that up is the stories and the encounters of people where, you know, the lady in Pennsylvania busts open the door and all of a sudden there's a Bigfoot on her porch. She pulls out a shotgun, they shoot the thing, and it disappears in a flash of light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, are these all the stories being told, you know, truthful and whatnot?
Yeah.
And that just blow that all up. But, you know, pushing that aside, what if, you know, again, there seems to be a lot of these type of stories all over the country, and a lot of them are not told. They're you know, go to someone's grave with them. They're not shared because of the whole ridicule factor. But I think more and more people are kind of coming forward, or I think more and more people are even having these experiences at a higher rate now than previously before. So,
yeah. Yeah, I have a hard time with the concept of interdimensional because it just is so...
Everybody does.
Yeah.
I still do, you know, because it just seems so science fiction, right? It's just...
I don't even get it because it's non-physical. So it's like, what is another dimension? And, you know, I've talked to some people. There's a guy who's more science-minded who came on the show and kind of described it to me because he knows about string theory and stuff. And for a moment there, I got it.
Yeah.
But it only lasted for a moment.
You just had it. Uh-huh. Yeah, and hopefully we're going to, you know, learn more about, you know, that. I'll have a better understanding of those type of things. But I do think it plays into the part of that puzzle.
Yeah.
Whether we don't want to understand it, we can't understand it, it could be what,
yeah,
what the answer is to all this too. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I always like to think is that we make scientific discoveries on pretty much a daily basis.
Yeah, isn't it real?
Yeah, and these are things we never even could have conceived of. Nothing our mind could have conceived of. They're making discoveries in space of things that they never thought would have existed. They never even, you know, speculated about these things. And they're there, or they discover them. So it's entirely possible.
Is it just me, or has it been like you said, it just seems to be amped up? Like there's so many things happening, like multiple on a daily basis. That's like, what is going on?
Yeah. It's almost like our world gets redefined on a regular basis.
Mm. Reset. New updates every day.
It's funny because. There was a friend of mine, a guy I met, who felt that Bigfoot was psychic. I don't know. He's wrote a book, I think, on it's called Psychic Bigfoot or something like that.
Psychic Sasquatch, Kewanee.
Yeah, yes. Exactly, Kewanee. And we went camping with him.
No way. Awesome.
Yeah, me and my cousin. And we came back. We went out for a week just into the wilds of in the middle of nowhere in Colorado and everything. So it was a lot of fun. But it's just I got to share the story because it was so funny. So my parents, you know, they weren't really into this, my mom and my stepdad so much. But we went to this Mexican restaurant that we went to frequently. And my stepdad actually got open to the idea of Bigfoot because his friends moved to Texas. And they said the locals there were seeing, claiming to see Bigfoot. So he was like, maybe that thing is real. And I don't know what to believe when I came to it, but I'm open to the idea. And you know, now, of course, I'm open to mysteries and stuff like that.
Sure.
And so I was talking about how this guy thought the Bigfoot was psychic. And my mom and my sister were like, you know what? That makes sense. That makes more sense because you don't find, like, you know, bones or anything. And they seem to scatter off before people can, you know, it's like they know you're there thinking of them. And my stepdad, who's a wildlife biologist, by the way, got so upset. He's like, no, it's an animal of some sort. It's not psychic. And that made my mom upset because he got so upset. So they just started arguing. And they were getting so loud. My sister and my niece who were there got embarrassed. They literally went to a different table because they were so embarrassed. And I was just laughing. It was so hilarious. My stepdad is just banging his hand on the table and declaring, and everybody can hear him, the Bigfoot is not psychic. It was just hilarious.
The layer of politics and religion now that you can't
talk. Exactly. It was like, you know, a couple debating politics, especially in this day and age. It was to that level. It was so funny. But that's what's interesting is that, you know, there's just so much we don't know. And I think it's a generational thing, too, especially with him, is that I think people, because we make these discoveries, and these discoveries are like magic, like our phone, okay? So all of a sudden our phones can do crazy things they couldn't do a week or two ago, you know, as they get upgraded. And to us these days, it's like that's no big deal, you know, that we make these huge discoveries that increase our abilities on a regular basis is no big deal. But in an analog world where things were more physical, you know, writing on paper or whatever, giant leaps like that were so rare. I think it's just a complete changed mindset that we have. And for better or worse, I don't know. But kind of to what you're saying, it's just anything's possible.
And you know what's interesting is I have always wondered where – you know, different researchers that have gotten into the field, whether it's ufology or you know, looking into Bigfoot, the ones that have done it for a long, long time have then, you know, whether they were skeptics before, like John Green, who's a journalist from Canada that turned into a believer, something happens there. And ones that have done it for a long time, too, have come to the conclusion that it is something different. It's not an animal. But I think more and more people, too, are coming around with the these other theories with the interdimensional and the telepathic piece. People seem to be having these encounters and having these things happen and gifts being given and things like that. So it's like, what is really going on here? Mm-hmm. I definitely think we're coming to a turning point of understanding. But I think some people are just not going to be ready for it. Some people will never accept it, and that's fine. I don't think everyone's going to believe in this kind of stuff, but be interesting to see what happens, that's for sure.
How has your book been received? I mean, are you shy about sharing the topic of your book or about your book at all?
You know, initially I was. It took me a while to really kind of go, okay, I'm going to do this now and put this together. So it brewed in my mind for a few years. And the biggest obstacle was worrying about how people would accept it and interpret it. But I wrote it for someone that would be a skeptic and not really understanding about this or never really being immersed or into this kind of subject. So I wanted to kind of put something out there that was, I'm going to give you a bunch of different evidence and then let you kind of make up your mind, but it's going to be so much that you're going to have to be kind of go, okay, something else is going on here. And so now I never had this is my first book, so I don't have a reputation to uphold or anything like that. I don't care if I shake up this whole, you know, community in the sense, because these are just experiences that I've infused, that I've had personally, and shared other stories that I think has to kind of come out. And I think it needs to be kind of shared and talked about, and I don't mind if it's me. And I think more so now, I think once people have read it, they kind of have a better understanding, because I did a lot of research for this, for the book, and put a lot into it. But I think it's proven to be a fun ride too, but then I think an eye-opening experience too, and a little bit of an awakening when someone does kind of read through all these different things and kind of open your mind to the possibility that we are still understanding how everything works, reality, everything else. We're just getting to that point right now of mm-hmm. understanding. So,
have you faced any negativity locally or otherwise?
No, I've actually so far so good. You know, I think you're going to have some opposition, but I think I've had the approach since this has come out, and this is the second year that I've spoken at the Greater New England UFO Conference, and I spoke at a Bigfoot conference in Western Mass earlier that month. But I've always kind of had the approach of collaboration and saying, you know, there's a lot of fighting that goes on within both camps of ufology and studying Bigfoot. And it's like, if we're going to keep on doing this, you're going to get the same results. So I've really kind of tried to embrace that collaboration aspect, and I think other researchers and other people, writers, authors that are into the subject, are getting more into the subject, are starting to kind of, we're starting to work together on trying to solve the riddle, at least work together to look into this. And so that's the cool part of it that's kind of been emerging from all of this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I used to do more kind of cross paranormal sort of research and involvement where I would participate in or hold, you know, other sort of lectures and stuff or venues for that sort of thing. And it used to be, and this was to my surprise, that the Bigfoot people were less willing to associate themselves with the UFO people as the UFO researchers were to accept the Bigfoot concept. Is that still the case?
You know, I think it still is to some extent. I do see some bleed through. I think just even with the past two conferences here with Nick coming was hugely successful and popular. People wanted to hear about the Men in Black and other aspects of Bigfoot. But I think it's getting more accepted that even researchers, some of the different ones that we're talking to, were starting to kind of look at, holy cow, you know, some of the stuff that my evidence, stuff that I come up with kind of seems to match yours, and there's some similarities here that I think we need to kind of like looking at each other's data and helping each other out. So I think there's more that spirit of collaboration that seems to be forming. So that's really refreshing to see. But I think you're always going to have people that are going to be ego-driven and want to be the ones that discover this and do that. But I think we're, again, coming to a cool time in all of this. Mm-hmm. We're going to see more of that collaboration, you know, coming forth.
Yeah, and there are so many weird, like, entity cases. I mean, that was my talk at the conference last year, and it was I did this to kind of push my own envelope where I did what are the strange alien cases, some of which seem very credible that are out there, and some of them are hard to dismiss. So if you have these really weird, you know, entity cases in the UFO arena, it then doesn't, you know, it's not a leap to it doesn't make these Bigfoot cases any more strange than some of these other cases.
Yeah, and you know, the area here is, you know, former Native American land, not too far away, considered sacred parts of that land, 80 square miles. And you know, there's elements of, I think every ghost hunting show on TV has been the Lemmonster, you know, different houses. It's been part of the Underground Railroad. And so there's, again, there's that other parallel, that other connection there, that, that spirit realm or whatever you may call it, that seems to have these hotspots have that piece to it as well. And that Lemmonster has that too. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. Really strange. Well, so cool. And it's so cool. I'd love to find out, about more of these places. So it's cool to find out that Monster Land exists because, you know, as more and more people start to share these stored sort of local folklore and stuff, it seems right. Like more of these sort of places are being unearthed where there's kind of just a concentration of strange events.
Yeah, and they seem to stay within the community, right, where people are not going to talk about it and the word of mouth doesn't really spread. Mm-hmm. But they seem to be like so many different pockets, these little circles, you know, all over the place, and that even within close proximity to each other, that they might be keeping, you know, these different stories and encounters to themselves, but they actually are connected to other ones that are close by. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just trying to see those patterns and those parallels, I think, is the next step too.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. So thank you so much for coming on
the
show.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much, man. It was awesome.
Oh, my pleasure. So people can go to Amazon and just look for Monsterland, and they'll be able to find it. Is there another place you would like people to go?
Yeah, they can also go to my website. It's Ronnie, R-O-N-N-Y, LeBlanc, LeBlanc.com. I'll have upcoming, you know, events, things I'm speaking at. But also links to buy the book that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Is there a part two or another book on the foreseeable future for you?
There is. I am starting to work on another book now that kind of is kind of a continuation, but then goes into another area of subject matter, but it is tied into Monsterland.
Sounds fascinating. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alejandro. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much to Ronnie for being on the show. Really interesting stories. I definitely recommend people get the book Monsterland. I love the way he has written it out, too. The book looks great, which is no small thing, because some of you may be painfully aware that many of the books in this field have these terrible covers. The artwork is just not well done, which is unfortunate, because then that doesn't get people to want to look inside. But this is a really fun book, and the font Monsterland is all in like thick, uppercase, and he's got embedded in there all of these little creatures and stuff, UFO, Bigfoot, alien, stuff like this. So it's really cool. It's a lot of fun. So definitely pick up the book. You can go to Amazon and you can find it there. You can also find it, as Ronnie said, at ronnieleblanc.com. So you can even just Google his name, Ronnie LeBlanc, and you'll find him. He's got, a Twitter account, and he's all up to speed on social media. So you can find him there. But it was a lot of fun. I was really glad to talk to him and that we were able to do this interview. So thank you so much to Ronnie for coming on the show and sharing the information. So also thank you to Martin Willis at the beginning of the show to talk about news. Remember, you can find all of the news we talked about at openminds.tv, including, information on how to watch that video that I was talking about. And again, I would love for you all to go to our YouTube channel, watch for free, our latest version of Open Minds magazine, where we talk about, the UFOs, secrecy, and the truth around that, using the government's own documents. That's the thing, people will want to, it's very frustrating when the Air Force continues to say, we haven't looked into UFOs since 1969, and we don't. Intuitively, that sounds ridiculous, that they wouldn't want to investigate an unknown object in our airspace. And certainly, they would, and they do. And we have official records to show that they do pay attention, and how they pay attention, and some of the cases that they've taken a special interest in. And so you can see all of that in this video, which is a bridge to look more in depth, which we'll do in the future, at some of these extraordinary cases. But you do see some of them here in this video. And of course, we're also highlighting the great work of some of the best researchers out there. And so we make reference to all of our sources. So you can go look at these documents for yourself, go read the books by the pioneer UFO researchers who have also uncovered this information, or go to their website. So it's very important for us to credit the people who are doing the work, because that's what we're doing. We're reporting this information and reporting who's doing what. And there are so many people doing such great work in this field. And that's what gets us so excited about doing the UFO Congress every year, because then we get to bring a lot of these researchers doing this amazing work to the conference to speak about what they're doing. And you heard me talking with Martin earlier today about this guy who trained NASA astronauts, who believes he has these, photographs that he's been able to get while he worked with NASA, and that that show alien bases. So very strange, very interesting, and you'll be able to see what he has to say at the UFO Congress, as well as Ted Rowe and Erica Lukes, who we talked about earlier today. And also, I was just looking at the website that Ted Rowe has put together for that project where they're trying to get this peer-reviewed journal. And he's got some pictures from the Hesdalen Lights in Norway, which is a UFO phenomena essentially going on in Norway that is being investigated by a university and has for decades. And we're going to have the man, the professor from Norway, who was in charge of that investigation at the UFO Congress also. So go to ufocongress.com for news on that, at ufocongress.com or at openminds.tv. In the upper right at openminds.tv, or if you scroll down a little, you'll see a big box there on UFOCongress.com. You can also subscribe to our email newsletter. Now, we don't blitz you with emails. We send emails generally every other week, so you only get like two a month, but it keeps you up to speed on what we've got going on. So when we have these new videos and some of the cool stories we've got going on, and it also lets you know when there are updates with the UFO Congress. So for instance, now once I post, which I haven't done yet, but I'll do in the next day or two, once I post Ken Johnston on Open Minds or on the UFO Congress speaker website, we'll only have one more speaker left to announce. So we have all of the speakers listed there. I think it's an incredible lineup. We've gotten some great feedback, and in fact, we've had tons of people signing up. So it's definitely going to be another great packed event. So be sure to register as soon as possible in order to reserve, you know, your spot at the Congress. It's always a ton of fun. And of course, if you have any questions, you can get a hold of us at through UFO Congress or through openminds.tv. We have a contact us section, but you can also send an email at contact@openminds.tv or info@ufocongress.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and also thank you to Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music. It's really cool stuff. Sometimes people ask, where can I get that music? If you go to the UFO radio page at openminds.tv, we have a link to his music page where he offers music for free to listen to, and I do like to listen to it occasionally. So really cool stuff. Also, we have posted at least not too long ago a story from his brother. Many of you probably know of him, Micah Hanks, who does the Graylian reports. Just wanted to give a shout out to Micah as well. Hopefully Micah will be at the conference selling books this year, so we'll get him to speak next year, hopefully. We just weren't able to arrange that early enough, because we get our speakers actually arranged very early. The only reason we don't have them listed is we want to have all the details worked out before we list people, so that it's solid, so you know for sure what's going on. That's what. But we actually have them chosen and work on getting the details throughout the year. But Micah Hanks will be hopefully, you know, I've talked to him. He says he's going to, you know, come and sell some books and have a vendor space. So we'll see if he's been able to work that out. But either way, thank you very much to Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music. And of course, as always, thank you, the listener, for being here once again. I do apologize that I didn't have a show last week. I was actually sick. I wasn't feeling good. I caught some kind of cold or something. But I am back at it, and we'll continue to have shows for the foreseeable future. Of course, the holidays are coming up, but that's a few weeks away still. Anyway, I hope you all have a safe and positive election day. Unfortunately, not everybody's candidates are going to win, but hopefully some of your candidates win and some of your issues or propositions you go for win. And but otherwise, I hope everybody's safe and civil. And remember, we're all in this together. It's a democracy, so we've got to respect each other's opinions, which, as we know in this field, is also very, very important, as there are just a number of varying opinions, tons of them. So I hope you have a great week, and we will talk to you next week, people. Adios, muchachos.